How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into a crossover edition, Locked On Grizzlies and Locked On Thunder. Of course, co-hosted by yours truly, Peter Edmiston, host of Locked On Grizzlies, along with Fred Katz, who is host of Locked On Thunder. And we do this in honor of the nationally televised game happening tonight between the Grizzlies and the Thunder, and a kind of a spicy rematch. Of course, this series, Fred, as you know, this thing is it's a rivalry. You can discuss where it ranks, each team's rival and all this, but it's definitely a rivalry. They've had memorable, tremendous playoff series. And this one has a little extra spice because of the nature of that 114-80 beatdown that the Grizzlies gave the Thunder just about, a week and a half ago, somewhere in that neighborhood. And the way it went down, and you were actually talking to Andre Robertson, among others, today, and he had some rather interesting quotes based on that blowout.
He did. So I'm going to read. Should I just read the full quote?
Yeah, just read that and then give me kind of your takeaway having talked to him.
Okay, so I'll give the full telling. So Brett Dawson from the Oklahoma, this was in a scrum with me and Brett and a couple other reporters, and it was at practice on Tuesday. So Brett asked him if, you know, the last time, 34-point game, you know, Westbrook got ejected in the third quarter. Stephen Adams was 1-for-9 from the field in that game. Like, no one, maybe Cantor was like, okay. But aside from that, like, no one played well in that game. They lost by 34, biggest blowout of the season. Do you throw out the game film? Is it one of those games where you throw out the game film and you don't worry about it? So I'm just going to read what Andre said. I would usually say it's one of those games where we throw it out. But at the end of the game, I feel like we got disrespected in a way. They kept launching threes at the end, and I didn't take that too kindly, and we remember that. We bring it up in film, and we'll come out tomorrow aggressively and try to get after it. So I followed up, and I assumed he was talking about the Troy Daniels specifically, because Troy Daniels attempted 8 threes in that fourth quarter, and he made 6 of them, and the team was, you know, really celebrating it and trying to get him shots. He was shooting early in the shot clock to try to get three-pointers. So I asked him, when you look at those Troy Daniels threes, I assume it's the Troy Daniels threes in film, how's the team react to that? And he said, we didn't react too kindly when it actually happened, to be honest with you. We just couldn't do nothing about it. We were on the bench. When he says we were on the bench, I assume he's referring to the starters were on the bench because it was all bench players out there. Back to Andre, when that stuff happens, it leaves a taste in your mouth after the game, to be honest with you. We remember that, and we're going to come out and try to repay that. That's Andre in full.
So what do you make of that? Is that his, you know, is that his personality? Is that unusual for him to be that pointed?
I've never heard him that pointed. He's kind of sassy, but he's a little sassy.
Sassy.
I would say those quotes are sassy.
Sassy.
Are they not sassy?
Do you remember? You probably don't remember that old Saturday Night Live sketch with Phil Hartman and Sassy. You should look that up. It's very, it's an old one. It's from the late 80s, but it's very good.
I will.
It makes me think of him. He just good to sassy. it was a little sassy.
He's a little sassy. Andre is kind of a sassy. He's a little bit of a sassy personality, but he's not a trash talker, I don't think. And he doesn't really say this stuff. So it's not like he like said one thing and it slipped out, you know, like this was intentional. He said about 12 sentences in a row. So and they were all along the same theme and he didn't stutter when he said it. So this was intentional. He knew what he was saying. He knew what he wanted to say in this scenario. And he's a pretty bright guy. So he knew what he was doing. For him to say this, it must have really peeved him. And he must have peeved other guys too, because I've never heard him say something. It's not like he's, you know, constantly running his mouth about the other team, you know? Like it must have annoyed him to a much higher degree than it might even seem on the surface.
This whole thing in the professional game, Fred, it drives me crazy. I mean, this is like when you're blowing a team out, particularly when you're the Grizzlies and you don't blow anybody out. Grizzlies don't blow anybody out. That's not what they do. They either win close games or they get blown out. They don't generally ever run up the score on anybody. So in the very rare occasion that they get to run up the score, especially on a night when the Thunder have shown, because of Russell Westbrook getting ejected and just the general tenor of the game, they're done with it. They weren't really going to fight it. It was what it was. Troy Daniels plays sparingly, throughout the first month of the season. Then he gets a little hot. He plays some, but his minutes are by no means locked in. So he gets hot. He wants to take some shots. So what? Like your team is running up the score. The opponent stopped them. Stop them from doing it. It's a professional game. This isn't college. It's in high school. And by the same token, if you're on the other side of the blowout, then your team needs to stop them too. And if you're a fan, I get why that would annoy you. But as a player, I think you would understand that's just the nature of it. And I don't think they were trash talking the bench per se. I don't think they were specifically doing that as a, you know, F you to who. I think it was just Troy Daniels was hot and he was having fun and the crowd was having fun. It was a fun night. It was a night before New Year's Eve. So everyone's, you know, having a good time. I think people were freaking out. If Roberson wants to use that as motivation, so be it. But I can't imagine that their effort is going to be decidedly different tonight because of that, based on or compared to what it would have been had that not happened.
The Thunder's effort, you mean?
Yeah, to me, the Thunder, they wouldn't have come out like
half-assed. Effort, I
like,
agree
tonight,
with you.
I don't think, you know, but now they're going to be locked in. That doesn't make any sense.
No, I mean, I agree with you, and I would never argue that. And I agree with, I'll say 98% of what you said. I've always been of the camp, same as you. In high school, you don't do that stuff.
Right, right.
These are kids having fun. Even in college, like, you don't do that stuff. But when you're a pro, go out and stop a guy, especially when it's Troy Daniels, you know? My other thing, though, is that when you're a pro, you have to deal with the repercussions of when you do that stuff. So, like, and coming back to what you said, I don't think the Thunder are going to be more locked in because of this. I don't think they're going to play harder because of this. I don't think they're going to play better because of this. I think they might play a little more physical because of it, though. Like, I think Troy Daniels put a target on himself. And I'm not saying anybody's going to go out and do anything dirty or anything like that, because I was running through the roster, and I was like, Andre's not a dirty player, so he wouldn't do anything dirty. Steven Adams has, you know, is an instigator for sure, but he tends to do that with bigs. I went through it, and I couldn't find a time where, like, Steven picked on a little guy. It's always, like, all of his issues come. They always start with boxing out with big guys, and then it escalates from there. Right. So I don't think he's the type of guy who's going to come out and just do, you know, give some chin music because of that. There's just not really anybody on this team who's going to come out and do the dirty, you know, Charles Oakley role. But I wouldn't be shocked if they came out and they were more physical with Troy Daniels.
I mean, if Kendrick Perkins was still on this team,
Kendrick Perkins would have smacked him.
Then that would have been, and then he and Zach Randolph could have had, you know, round three or four of their epic battle, and they could have had another "we don't bluff" thing, and he could have chased him to the back like he did before, and it would have been great. I mean, we would have all appreciated that. I got news for Roberson, though, and the rest of the Thunder. You're not going to see Troy Daniels till the second half, most likely. That's been the way that it's gone for the Grizzlies over the last at least two games, because of the nature of Chandler Parsons' return. Parsons has come back, of course, from the myriad knee injuries and the whole thing, and he's finally starting to look a little better after lengthy, I mean, very creaky, looking not rusty, but completely encased in rust, And now you're starting to see a little thawing of that, and he starts to look a little bit like a player. And it's coincided with the Grizzlies and he having some, I think probably some tense discussions even about his role. And they decided they wanted to put his 15-minute limitation that he's been on right now, his restriction is 15, they decided to do all of it in the first half. So, you know, as opposed to spreading it out 4 minutes here, 5 minutes there throughout the whole game, they said, look, you're not getting into a rhythm, you're not getting into a lather, you're not even getting a sweat, and you got to come out of the game. Let's give you the whole run, let's give you a half, and then forget about it. And it's worked well. It worked well in Golden State. He had 10 points in the first half there. He had 9 points in the first half against Utah. Looked better, hit some threes. The jump shot looked a little bit better. But in the second half, he was replaced more or less by Troy Daniels. Like that, his role, not initially. I think James Ennis starts, but then quickly Troy Daniels soaks up a lot of those minutes. So if they want to get direct revenge physically, it's going to be a matter of patience. Because you're not going to, at least if the recent trends hold up, you're not going to see Troy Daniels until midway through the third quarter.
Is this the first time you've led a Grizzlies podcast this year with Troy Daniels talk?
No. Sadly, it was in the preseason when he was god-awful and looked nothing like an NBA player. We led with, is this guy even going to make the team? It was you can't even believe the turnaround, Fred, that he's had. And really the Grizzlies, I mean, since these two teams played, the Grizzlies have had their typical ups and downs. You know, they gave a disastrously poor effort in Staples Center twice in a row and really got hit, Fred, by the timing of spending New Year's in Los Angeles. That's a bad, it's a bad deal. They played in Sacramento New Year's Eve afternoon. Then flew to L.A. for New Year's and then had 3 days off, 2 days off, three days between. Then they played the Lakers, Clippers back-to-back in Staples. So that's just a bad – that's when all the Chandler Parsons TMZ stuff happened. You know, it was a bad deal. And it and obviously it caught a lot of those guys. The effort level against the Lakers and the Clippers was putrid, desultory, I would say. I mean, just pitiful. But then they went to Golden State and had that incredible historic comeback, down 24 in the third quarter, down 19 with 8 minutes left in Golden State. They come back to win in overtime. So, you know, they're still a really frustrating team to figure out, but they followed that up with a solid win against the Jazz, nice physical sort of typical Grizzly type performance. You know, they seem to have found something a little more consistent in the last couple games. Maybe it's the Parsons thing, I don't know. But they're starting to look more like themselves. I'll put it that way. So this is a better Grizzly team now than the one that the Thunder played. And I assume the Thunder, based on what I've seen from afar, Fred, you know, similar ups and downs, I suppose. But they looked okay on Monday.
Yeah, they played a really good game, I thought, against Chicago. I thought that was one of their best games of the year. Westbrook played great. Adams has really found, really since the Memphis game, he's really found an offensive groove. He was really bad against Memphis. Like, the fact that Marc Gasol exists might have something to do with that.
That can complicate things.
But he was bad on his own in that game. Like, he missed some wide open layups and like some bunnies, and like he was 11 for 14 from the field in that game against Chicago. He's been scoring at a really high rate for him. He's really becoming a 16, 17-point-a-game guy with, 60% from the field. He's got the hook shot down, the right-handed hook shot down. The floater is down. He's finishing strong around the rim. He can dunk on you. He can finish lobs. He's getting putbacks. He's got nice touch around the rim with either hand. He's become a real offensive weapon, a real scorer down low. And he'll get you on the post, on pick and roll. He's a great screen setter. I wish the Thunder would use him more as a screen setter, specifically off the ball, to try to free up other guys off the ball. I think that would be really helpful. But he's a guy who I think, and look, we haven't even talked about the fact that last time these two teams played, I mean, Mike Conley didn't play, and Russell Westbrook only played half the game because he got ejected early in the third quarter. So out of 8 possible quarters of 2 of the best point guards in the NBA, we only got 2 of them. So that's going to change a lot of the way this game is played also.
Yeah, no, I think there's no question about that. It's and Mike Conley's playing better now. I when we last spoke, I highlighted those numbers that have been really interesting with Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, and since Mike Conley returned, you know, from his back injury, he wasn't right. Marc Gasol wasn't right, and it's only the last few games that they've sort of started to right that ship a little bit. Their net rating, you know, prior to the Golden State game, you know, their net rating was they were plus 30 in the games from Mike Conley's return. They were plus 30 with Gasol and Conley on the bench, which is amazing. And so, you know, that tells you the rhythm that Conley had was just non-existent. It was probably better for the Grizzlies at that point that Conley didn't play, because Gasol played better without Conley. Now, over the last couple games, I think, and I talked to Mike Conley about his back, and I think the back has been the thing. It's been surprising to him how difficult he's found it to kind of get back to his normal feel for shots, feel for moves, normal feel. You know, as you just talked about, the Grizzlies are a very physical team. I would expect a very physical game in Oklahoma City tonight. I think that's something that Conley has shied away from, but he's starting to get more comfortable with again. And as that has happened, the Grizzlies are starting to look better with that starting unit, and Marc Gasol starting to look better. And in fact, you know, Marc Gasol, you know, you talked about him and Steven Adams. You know, Gasol's ability to hit the three, you know, teams are much more apt to close out on him now, and so he's having to, you know, put it on the deck, drive a little bit. He's developed a little bit of a floater, which is interesting for a man of his size. He can pass exceptionally well. But the interesting thing is it's allowed David Fizdale to play him and Zach Randolph together a little bit more, which is something that he didn't want to do at the beginning of the season. But their spacing is different now. When Mark goes out to, you know, in years past, it was a lot of high-low, Mark on the high elbow, Zach low block, that kind of stuff. Maybe pick and pop where they'd run a Conley-Gasol screen and roll, and you know, Gasol would pick out to like 19 or 20 feet, but not any further. And that didn't leave enough space for Zach Randolph to operate on the block. But now you saw, like, especially at the end of the Golden State game, that, you know, when Mark would be up at the top of the key, you know, 25 feet, 26 feet out, they would do a little triangle with him and Mike and Zebo, and it would create a tremendous space. And Zach would seal smaller defenders, guys like Durant, way deep, guys that are trying to play power forward against him, and would kill him. And it's been an interesting kind of domino effect that I didn't necessarily see coming, but in execution, you think about it, it makes sense. And if the Thunder try to use undersized guys or try to use those smaller lineups, the Grizzlies have found a way to parlay Marc Gasol shooting into better low post play from Zach Randolph, which is interesting.
Yeah, it's one thing I wonder about how the Thunder, because the Thunder have gone big more often than not recently. They found a lot of success with the Cantor and Adams lineup on Monday in Chicago, and I wonder exactly how they're going to go about using that. Cantor's been so good for their second unit the last month. This is the best basketball he's played in his entire life. He's just improved so much as a passer. They're really running the entire offense through him. They're letting him facilitate the entire second unit offense. I mean, he's going so well. It's worked well with Adams. Defensively, it's one of those cases. Often Adams guards the four and Cantor guards the five if they go big. And if Donovan does decide to do that against Memphis, I think it might be reversed, because it's one of those weird scenarios where you go, if they do go Randolph and Gasol, where they do go 4-5 and the four is inside and the five is the one who pops. With Memphis. So I think Adams actually would be guarding the natural guy. And Cantor's not the worst post defender in the world. Now, Zebo hurt them last time because he hurt them from the outside. And he obviously is shooting more threes now than he really has since, like, he was with the Clippers, you know, eight years ago. And that's a weapon that he can use. And if they play Cantor out there, then that's something I'm sure they'll try to take advantage of, because that's what Cantor's weakness is. If you can pull him out to the perimeter defensively, you know, you can get him in pick and roll, whatever it is. Like, that's a real struggle for him. But I wonder, that's going to be a really interesting matchup to see exactly how much they can use Cantor, because he's been huge for them the last month or so. And him getting minutes is a really big deal, and it's really important to their success right now.
Well, and I think the Grizzlies will struggle defensively with that unit to figure out what to do with Cantor. He's so skilled. You know, as you mentioned, his ability to pass is excellent, but you know, we've seen, and you know that he's capable of putting up lots of points in lots of different ways. He's really gifted. And for a big man, you know, the defensive questions aside, offensively, there's no doubt what he can do. The Grizzlies have at times, even though they are a tremendous defensive team, they have struggled to defend, the post. They are a bottom third team, in terms of per possession synergy numbers defending the post. You know, that's an area where, you know, you could see, especially from the bench group, they've sometimes not been able to figure out who to use there or what kind of lineups work best. It hasn't helped them that they've lost Brandon Wright for the season. He is maybe going to make his way back at some point. I don't know. Deontay Davis was back to practice on Tuesday for the first time in a while. Still not quite there, but he's had some plantar fasciitis. He was a guy that, even as a rookie, though he had some mistakes, he was a rim protector in kind of a weak side shot blocker, the type that they don't really have. So without him, it's a lot of pressure on the starters to play a little bit longer in the front court, or in guys that can step in and you know, maybe are a little bit undersized. Yeah, they've played some lineups with Vince Carter, you know, playing the four a lot. And those lineups, if you have a matchup with a guy like Cantor, for example, who ends up, if they end up cross-matched with Carter, forget about it. So that, I think that's a good thing that you highlight, and it could be a big night for Cantor, and the Grizzlies are going to have to figure out, you know, how they want to defend and how much they're willing to risk with him on the court, because, you know, you help too much at all. And if he's out there with Russ or, anybody else that can do something, then you leave yourself very vulnerable.
Can we talk about something that's a little unrelated to the game, but is very related to the Grizzlies?
Sure. Of course.
I didn't listen to your show from yesterday. I assume you talked about it, but I want to talk about it with you. I think you know what I'm going to ask. Can we talk about Tony Allen's All-Star ballot?
I played it on the show. I couldn't resist. It was
it's like the funniest video I've ever seen.
I mean, the dude's incredible. He's a treasure. I think that's how I described it. I think he's a treasure. We should just appreciate his unfiltered, bizarrely unfiltered nature. I mean, just dogging out. And then he did a video today. I don't know if you saw it, or I guess Tuesday, but he did a video where he was, he tried to explain. He wasn't trying to make fun of Matthew Dellavedova, as he likes to call him, or Mo Williams gets a vote. Luke Babbitt was the best. He said,
did
he's
any reporter
to make fun
ask
of
him
guys.
Why? Did any reporter ask him why he voted for Luke Babbitt?
Well, he said he was just if you saw the video, and you know, there was the whole process of bringing these guys in. It was an off day for the Grizzlies on Monday, so they brought in the guys to do their voting, I guess. And you know, players have their own specialized, like now this year because they've changed it. Players have their own little specialized code that they have to be. They have to put it in. They have to do this. It's like a whole thing. So it's not just, you know, one little email or something. And so that was the whole process that he was recording. And you saw the Grizzlies. You heard the PR staff kind of chuckling in the background on this whole thing. I think he just voted for him because that's who he saw first. He just saw it. He's like, I got to vote. He didn't even want to vote for the Eastern Conference. You know,
yeah,
as he said, he said, do I have to vote for the East? He's like, come on, man.
So my process of consuming that video was I saw Bob Vulgaris tweeted out with like, this is what you like, with like some comment about like, you know, this is why implying that like, this is what you get for having, you know, players make up 25%
right.
of the vote now. And he said, you know, he voted for, what was it? Mo Williams, Kemba Walker, Luke Babbitt, who were the rest? What was the rest of the?
It was Andre Drummond. He voted for real.
Andre Drummond, because
that was his guy. Andre Drummond and Michael Beasley.
How could I forget Michael Beasley?
Yeah, come on.
And I was like, I saw that, and I was like immediately annoyed. You know, I was like, this is the responsibility the players have wanted for so long, and they gave it to him, and like Tony Allen's disrespecting that. And then I watched the video, and that immediately went away, and I was just like, I'm so glad this happened.
I mean, Tony. The thing about Tony is that he is a very intense dude. He is a very tough dude. He's a legit tough guy.
not fake tough guy, but real tough guy. As you know, you can ask, you know, OJ Mayo about that. You can ask a few others. But he's also a goofball, and he's the kind of guy that, like, you know, I spent time one, I forget what it was, maybe it was even the Thunder game, but one of the games recently, he was showing me, like, he's, you know, he's got his son that he, you know, that his Twitter profile is his young son, and he always talks, you know, he does all the Periscopes with his son when they're on the road. He loves his kid. He's just this doting dad. But like, we spent probably 5-10 minutes after all the media stuff was over, and he's just showing me stuff, and he's showing me like this video of his son, you know, hitting the ball and doing this and doing that, like that. He's just that kind of guy. So he comes at it with this like goofball approach. I'm struggling to find a word I can say on our podcasts. He's not being a jerk to, you know, these guys. Yeah. I think he's just like, he's just being goofy. Like Luke Babbitt knows. Is Luke Babbitt really offended? Come on, man. Luke Babbitt knows the deal. Luke Babbitt's a professional basketball player.
Luke Babbitt knows the deal.
He knows the deal.
That should be on Luke Babbitt's tombstone. years from now, he looks like
he's part of, you know, Lord of the Rings.
Luke Babbitt. He knew the deal.
I mean, I can't say any differently. You know, if Luke's offended by that, then I'm offended by Luke. Come on, man. There's no way Luke Babbitt spends every day in an NBA team around these guys and doesn't know the deal and doesn't have a sense of humor about this whole thing. There's no chance. He wasn't offended by it. I'm sure Mo Williams thought it was hilarious. I would assume Dellavedova. I don't know Dellavedova, so maybe, but I can't imagine that he was that upset about it. These dudes, so what? I mean, you know, it is what it is. Like, if anyone took that in anything other than just like a guy just having fun, then he said it. And you know, the thing is, Fred, he said himself, he goes, I'm not an all-star. And then he voted for himself anyway, just for the hell of it. Yeah. But he said it
because for some reason, even though that dude has played in God knows how many basketball games in his life, I guess he forgot that there are two guards. Because he said, I'm not an all-star, I'm voting for Mike Conley. And then he voted for Mike Conley. He was like, I get to vote for two guards? What has
Tony
he thought
Allen.
This whole time? How many guards has he thought there were?
I mean, there's a lot of things about Tony. Tony gets very locked in on stuff. You know, if you've watched him with layups, he does weird stuff happens with Tony. Have you ever watched Tony? Do yourself a favor tomorrow and watch Tony during all the timeouts, and just watch him wander around. Like, he doesn't actually, he's not ever part of the huddle that the team does. He just wanders. He sort of wanders the court. He wanders up. He'll talk to somebody. He'll laugh. He'll joke. He'll point with this. But yet the dude knows everything. He's calling out other teams' plays before they happen. He knows every action that any play could give you. You can quiz him on, especially on the primary defender he's got. He knows everything. He knows what that dude ate for breakfast. He knows everything. Now, he doesn't have to be in the huddle. He doesn't have to get all that stuff. That's just him, man. So he's a unique dude. And people, there was some discussion earlier in the year about Tony Allen being part of trade talks, or that the Grizzlies were listening on Tony. And maybe that's true. I mean, it would make some sense that final year of a contract. He's 35. He's got bulky knees. He can't play the minutes that he used to, although he's averaging, you know, close to a career high in minutes per game this year, weirdly enough. But you can't necessarily get a guaranteed 70, 75, 80 games at 30 minutes a game out of this guy. But objectively, it makes sense to listen to offers if you get something decent for a guy like that. But he's just in the DNA of the city. I mean, he just is. And it's stuff like that endears him to everyone. And if they trade him, it's going to break a lot of hearts. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't know what he's going to do, if they're going to re-sign him. But if they trade him, it's going to break a lot of hearts.
You know the actual serious issue that this the reason I say it's an issue is not because Tony Allen specifically did it. It's because everyone's going to do it. Players should not be allowed to vote for their own teammates. Because everyone's just going to vote for their own guys. Everyone's going to do that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd be fine with that. I think that this is the whole thing. And you know, were you covering Durant last year when he was doing the whole thing about the media? You guys don't know this. You guys don't know that.
I wasn't in Oklahoma City yet, but you know, I obviously followed the whole situation. But right. I was not yet in Oklahoma City when he said
that. I mean, like I have to a degree, I have some sympathy with that. There are definitely things that players know and have awareness of, skills and issues and all kinds of things that those of us covering them will not know, that cannot know. There's certain applied knowledge that you just get from that information that is, you know, priceless and vital and is definitely worth something for sure and very important. But this blanket thing of you've never done it so you can't talk about it doesn't make any sense. I mean, how many people that vote in the Oscars have directed a film? I mean, how many people that vote
for president have been president?
Right. I mean, how many that you can go through up and down examples. I mean, how many times you've been to a restaurant, you didn't like it. Are you a chef? Do you cook? Do you own your own place? You know, how many times you've been to a friend's house, you didn't like the way the house was set up and built? Are you an architect? I mean, you know, the logic doesn't add up. It's the same as true for, there are things that people on the outside can see with basketball or any other sport, especially if you follow it and you follow the entire league closely, that a player who's very up close won't see, just trends or things like, they just won't, because that's not their job. They wouldn't be expected to see it. So I always bristle when I hear that. And it's just, I think it's flawed logic.
Well, you know, it's like anything else. Some players are really smart and do it the right way. Some players don't do it the right way. And some people in the media are really smart and do it the right way. And some people in the media are freaking idiots. So in like any other industry, some people are smart and some people are dumb and most people are in between.
So that's beautifully said. And that's a good way to kind of wrap this thing up. Do you think, last thing then, Fred, do you think that tonight the Thunder enact the Robertson's devastating revenge, that he comes out and hits six threes right in Troy Daniels' face and trash talks him? Is that what happens?
Andre might. He'll trash talk him. I don't know if he's going to hit threes.
Sassy trash talk, sassy, or sass him up,
well,
sass mouth.
Dre like blocked James Harden in like a ridiculous block in that Houston game, and then Mutombo finger wagged him.
Great game.
And then amazing game. Best Thunder game of the year. Amazing game. And then when he got hacked the other night, he made two free throws. And who was that? Denver. Denver hacked him and he made two free throws, and then he Mutombo finger wagged the Denver bench. So like he's finger wagging pretty recently. So maybe he does that to Troy Daniels.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that. The Thunder win.
I think they do win. That's my Homer Oklahoma City media pick.
Okay. That's good. You are hosting Locked On Thunder. That's good. I think you're wise to eat out of that trough. That's very good.
No, I do. I think despite the result of the last game, I think these teams are really even.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're really, really even. I think the result, not the fact that the Grizzlies won, but just the fact that they just absolutely annihilated them. I think that part was flukish. Marc Gasol's first team NBA in my mind. Mike Conley is absolutely fantastic. They've got a lot of good players. They've got a good team. We talked about this last time. They always outperform their net rating every single year. And they're doing it again this year. I think these teams are – this game is huge. Like, this game is about as big as any Thunder game will be this year. And you probably say the same for the Grizzlies, because I think these teams are so close. And in the standings, they're so close right now that, like, head-to-head could end up deciding their season. Like, if they play four times. Like, if the Grizzlies finish, you know, two games better than the Thunder and they win, you know, three out of four, that's – you know, that's it right there. Or if they tie or something, if they tie or something, like they go to head to head. So
yeah,
that's
I said this the last thing, but I realized there's one other thing I wanted to ask you. So this little group of four that has emerged, you know, you've got these tiers and it's, I think it's pretty clear this is the way it's going to be for the rest of the season. Top tier, Warriors, Spurs, Rockets in some order, probably Warriors. And then I don't know. I like the Rockets. I think the Rockets are for real this year. But then
I actually agree with you.
those three kind of in their thing. Then 4 through 7, Clippers, Spurs, Grizzlies, Thunder, and then the race to get the crap kicked out of you by the Warriors and a bunch of bad teams beyond that. So in that four-team group that the Grizzlies and the Thunder find themselves in, Clippers, Jazz, how do you order those four? What do you think in terms of who the best team is? Well, let's not worry about the standings or what they're going to look like at the end of the year just yet. I'm talking about just you objectively. You've watched them all play. You're covering the league, and you know the Thunder better than just about anybody. Grizzlies, Jazz, Clippers, Thunder, rank them 1 through 4.
I think the Clippers are going to end up getting the four. They're the four now, and they're going to get, assuming they get Blake Griffin back healthy within the next 3 weeks or so, which they're supposed to, that team just gets even better. And they always are better in the second half of the season, maybe because that's when they start to get healthy. But they're always better in the second half. They always close the regular season strong every year. Last year they did it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. They always close the regular season strong. So I think the Clippers end up getting that four. Utah in the five, they're more balanced than the Thunder or the Grizzlies. I think they're still top 10 in offense and defense right now.
Yeah.
So that balance, I think, is just going to carry them. I think they're going to win. Yeah, I think they're going to win in the 50s. I don't know. Memphis and the Thunder, like, are just dead even to me. That could be like tiebreaker, like same record tiebreaker deciding 6 and 7.
Yeah, I think they're really tight. I think I'm going to disagree just a little bit. I think Utah is 4. I would put Utah ahead of the Clippers. I think I agree with you about the Clippers and the way they tend to play, but you know, injury wise, you know, we saw with Chris Paul out, and apart from the game in which they embarrassed the Grizzlies, you know, they need Chris Paul. And as soon as he came back, they're right back there. I don't know how much they need, you know, Blake Griffin, weirdly, you know, the way that they've played without him. And he's a weird fit now, in some respects with what they do. He's really good, but, you know, he's so injury prone. I don't know. I just think there's going to be some uncertainty there. And I would lean Jazz, Clippers probably, but, you know, I think it's probably gonna be Jazz, Clippers, and then I'm with you. You know, Grizzlies, Thunder is a coin flip, and you know, as long as Westbrook stays healthy, the Thunder are gonna be, you know, they have a puncher's chance against anybody in the world, and you know, the Grizzlies, they have to avoid injury themselves. So I'll say the Grizzlies will edge it. So I think that's the way it'll end up. So if I'm going 1, 2, 3, 4, I'm gonna say Jazz, Clippers, Grizzlies, Thunder. But yeah, I do think it's going to be pretty close throughout. And I mean, for example, the Jazz, you know, you saw again last night, they beat Cleveland. You know, they can do that on their home floor. It's a tough place to go and play. I mean, they were disjointed on Sunday against the Grizzlies, but they're still working guys back to health. They're 9-1 when George Hill and Gordon Hayward both play. And the only one was to the Grizzlies the other night. So I think that if once they are healthy, I think they'll zoom ahead. That's just me.
And if they can get Derek Favors to just start playing anything close to Derek Favors, like that's the thing. Like they're playing really good basketball, and Derek Favors has just been like so far from himself.
Oh yeah.
He's had a couple of maybe a couple of good games. But offensively he's just not there. And defensively, he's not having the season that he did last year. I don't know if he's still playing hurt, or whatever it is, but he just has not been the player that he should be and that he's capable of being. And he's still 25 years old and tremendously talented. He had a really good year last year. And if he just starts playing, not talking about taking a leap from last year, if he just plays exactly the same as he did last year, this team is even better.
I would, yeah, I mean, it, or if they find, you know, a move to make, you know, they've got, I mean, I don't know that they will, but they certainly could. Favors is a weird fit at times, but I'm with you. He's super talented. And, you know, when you said 25, it's just like, wow, you're right. I mean, it's crazy. He feels older than that, but he's not. they've turned, you know, Joe Ingles into a player. George Hill is tremendous. Great defensive. I mean, Rudy Gobert is he's a monster. And they Gayton Gordon Hayward's having a big time year when he plays. Rodney Hood hasn't even played particularly well of late, and he's a dangerous guy. That's why I like him. But I can see your point. I'm looking forward to it, Fred. And let's do it again down the line. You know, I don't know if we can even do it when the Grizzlies and Thunder don't play, because you know, I enjoy talking to you, and especially now that you're healthy. Last time we spoke, you were battling a 101 degree fever, which, you know, it doesn't sound all that bad to me, Fred, but I imagine it was brutal.
I apparently gave it to Jimmy Butler
and everyone else in the A for, you know, there have been multiple guys down with the flu. I don't know what's going on. You gotta be careful, Fred. Don't sneeze on people.
I'm gonna say they gave it to me.
It's a lot of close quarters. You know, this job's a lot of close quarters. You know,
true.
You got to be very careful. Wear the mask. About that, get one of the surgical masks out. Fred, thanks, man. I appreciate it. I had a great time.
Yeah, it was fun.